This is KZSU Stanford. Mystery Playhouse 90.1 will not be aired this week in order to present you the following special, a play-by-play rendition and repeat performance of the basketball game from last night. That'll start in 3 seconds.
This is the BBC Light Program.
Encore? Certainly.
This is the BBC Light Program.
Hear that applause, dear listener. It was not for Danny Kaye, not for Fred Lane. No. It was all for a commoner garden BBC announcer, Wallace Greenslade. How did he come by this rapturous applause? It is with heavy heart and light kidneys that we tell you
the Greenslade story, or
winds like to variable.
My name is Snag, John Snag. Thank you, Sirian. It was in June 1954 that the lad Wallace Greenslade first came to the BBC seeking refuge from hard work.
Good morning, miss. I'm Mr. W. Greenslade.
Oh, yes, you've come for the vacant post of announcer.
Yes, I have.
Do take a seat with the other applicant.
Thank you. I sat down next to a man wearing a brass deerstalker, white cricket boots, and a shredded cardboard wig.
Hello.
Good morning.
Wind like a variable.
Pardon?
Well, I said the wind like a variable.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wind like a variable. I'm practicing, you know.
Don't tell me you're applying for the post of announcer.
Oh, yeah. And I'll get it, too. You see. I'm wearing a Cambridge tie.
You? You were at Cambridge?
Yeah.
What were you doing there?
Buying a tie.
Mr. Liddell will see you now, Mr. Eccles.
Fine, fine, my good woman. Well, this is it. £2,000 a year and a pension.
Get out, you idiot!
Wait a minute! You ain't even heard me speak yet.
We'll write to you.
Well, that's no good. I can't read. Hey. Did you see that? He threw me out. Threw me out of the famous Eccles. He got no respect for the dead, that man. You could all laugh, but he never even let me say winds like the variant. I'm going to tell my electrocution teacher.
Will you come in now, Mr. Greenslade?
Thank you, madam. I was led into the presence of a BBC official. I took off my shoes and knelt down.
Now, Mr. Greensleeve, can I hear you say something?
Certainly. Winds light to variable.
By Jove, you couldn't have picked a more appropriate phrase.
Oh, it was nothing.
Come, come. Say it again. Say it again with a smile in the voice.
Of course. Winds light to variable.
Delicious. quite enchanting. Now say it as though it were a national catastrophe.
Oh, winds light to variables. Oh.
Very touching. Quite touching. Yes, I think you have it, Mr. Greenslade. You can start work at once.
Get me a BBC announcer.
Dear listeners, how could my private school for announcers, with its 56,000 trainees, succeed if the BBC kept turning down my ace pupils like Eccles? Please, gentlemen, keep up your spirits, lads. I mean, say after me, winds like to variable.
Winds like to variable.
There you are, lads. Good. Doesn't that make you feel better?
Oh, no. What?
What's that? Bloodlock, please.
Listen, Neddy.
Mr. Bloodlock, please. I mean...
Never mind these naughty winds like the variable. What about some earthquakes in East Acton?
What about earthquakes in East Acton?
What about... I've been training at this school for 6 years to say earthquakes at East Acton.
So what?
Well, they never have one.
Yes. But at the slightest tremor, I'll write to the BBC.
No.
I will indeed. Now then, keep up your morale, man. Say after me, earthquakes in East Acton.
Earthquakes in East Acton.
There you are. Yeah? How about that, eh?
I feel better already.
Of course you do.
Yes.
Now, here's the model of Three and Jacob. Let's stick pins in it.
Right.
Oh, man, don't you dare do that again.
Thank you, Fred Jacobs. No, it's no good, dear listener. I can't deceive my pupils as to the seriousness of the situation. While Greenslade grew in popularity, I decided to strike.
Yes.
So, Neddy, you want us to kidnap the entire BBC announcing staff?
Yes. I've got to create vacancies for my own men. You'll be well paid.
Paid? Money? How much?
For every announcer removed, I'll pay one simulation lead florin. And you can have that in writing.
We'd rather have it in cash, if you don't mind.
Very well. Here's a photograph of a pound.
Thank you. Moriarty, see if this is a forgery.
Oh, at once, at once.
Now, gentlemen, when do you start work?
When? Switch on the talking wireless.
Here is the 9 o'clock noise. The president of Scrampton paid a true deposit to Blackenham Plus.
You see, Neddy, we've started already. Now, excuse me while I...
Don't switch off. Listen to this.
We must apologize for the break in the news. In the meantime, here is the record.
Hello, folks. Winds like the variable. Solar outlook, fine.
Wonderful! Or if you're French, wunderbar. At last, Mr. Eccles was being heard on the radio. One by one, the BBC announcers were kidnapped. Or, if they were over 21, adult nap. Get it? Adult nap! Max Gilby, pull the bollard.
Thank you.
Is all wrong. I colors in it at all.
Relax, Nelly, relax. Well, your record selling well. You nothing to worry about.
Go on with them. I said, relax, you say. By heaven, it's 3 months since you promised to kidnap Greenslade, but still no result.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. I tell you, don't worry, Nelly. At last, he found a chink in his armor.
These Chinese get everywhere.
What?
Greenslade has a huge public. They want to see him in the flesh.
On all of it?
Yes.
He's a danger to shipping.
Neddy, we are going to offer him a contract to appear on the stage.
God, yes. If he leaves the BBC, the way will be clear for Mr. Eccles. An excellent plan. We'll do it.
And do it they did. But the BBC didn't give me up without a fight. In fact, they even sent John Snagg round to my private abode.
Thou knocked, oh shivering white infidel, cor blimey.
Yes, is Wallace in?
Wallace? Dost thou mean the great Greenslade? He whose voice drips like honey upon the ears of the waiting world. He of the velvet petal tongue.
Yes, yes, that's Wall.
Whom shall I say craves audience?
Tell him it's John Snagg. No, wait. Tell him it's Snaggers. He whose voice once yearly rings out from the Thames motor launch that usually fails. He whose voice tells the masses of a watery combat twixt men in two slender willow slim craft that race on the bosom of our river and race past Mortlake Brewery towards their Olympic goal.
Cor blimey, man, follow me.
Dear listeners, I was led across a marble courtyard of solid wood, and here and there silver fountains gushed claret. And there lying in a silken hammock suspended between two former television toppers, was Wallace Greenslade.
Ah, John, dear John, you couldn't have arrived at a better moment. I was just about to unveil a small bronze statue of myself.
Look here, Wallace. There's a rumor going around the corporation that you're thinking of leaving.
Well, John, I have been getting offers.
But, Wallace, you're not going to leave us. Remember, you're British.
Dear John, what can I say?
But what's the matter, Wallace? Aren't you happy with us? Isn't £3.10 a week enough?
Not quite, John.
But man alive, you have a free copy of the Radio Times every week.
Yes, there is that.
Well, now look, Wallace.
What, John?
I've been given authority to offer you £4 a week. And you can read the 9 o'clock news at 5:30 if you want to. And take your own time about
it. Not so fast, Mr. John Boatry Snagg.
That voice came out of a little ball of fat that sprang from behind a piano stool.
My name is Neddy Seagoon.
What a memory you have.
Not so fast.
I said it as slowly as possible.
Sir, you're the famous John Snag, eh? Known as the male Sabrina of Portland Place.
Now, steady, Seagoon, or I'll ban your record on Housewives' Choice.
Meanwhile, never mind. I still have my shaving turn.
Mr. Snag, I fear you have arrived too late to save Mr. Greenslade. He has already signed a theatrical contract at £5 a week.
£5? There isn't that much.
Yes, there is. And here it is in used stamps.
Alas, I cannot offer him more. So this, then, is the end of the once great BBC announcing star. Where are they now? That noble band. Andrew Timothy, missing. Alva Liddell went down with his lift. Richard Dimblebear, overweight. And finally, Ronald Fletcher, gone to the dogs.
Stop! Stop! You're breaking my heart. I can help you. I have a man here to take that place. Speak, lad, speak!
Wayne's like the variable. Wait a minute, Mr. Nag. You're very lucky to get me.
I have no choice. Put him in a sack.
So saying, Mr. Snag took the famous Eccles off on his tricycle. Next day, we took Greenslade off on his triumphal stage tour. Everywhere he went, success. Then the first opening night at the London Palladium. What a night that was. What a night. His merest whim was catered for.
Neddy, bring me a merest whim.
At once, Wallace, in cellophane. Gad, there's a packed house out there waiting for you.
How they love me. Neddy, say, come in for me.
Of course, Wall, of course. Come in! Who is it?
It's Lou! Oh, come and say good evening!
It's your agent! Come in!
Oh, my lovely little Wallace! Ooh, you're gonna kill him tonight! You're a lovely boy! Ooh, you're lovely, making a lot of lovely money for me, make a fortune! Ooh, that lovely talking voice! I'll get you Ed Sullivan TV next, I promise you!
His men, if you understand.
Out the way, Steakum. You're finished. All that shaving and thing. It's all finished.
What?
On with the moxes. It's all washed up. Now then, here. Wallace. Val Parnell's out front tonight, so do your best. I'll see you get a nice big bonus. Goodbye, my lovely boy. The guilt he's making for me.
You'd never think that man's father was a duke, would you?
No.
Well, don't, because he wasn't. Who's there?
Autograph, hunters, buddy.
What do you want, buddy?
Autograph. We're modern style Bobby Sucks, buddy. Yes. In the middle of all. We want Wall's autograph, buddy.
I'm very sorry Mr. Greenslade left his autograph at home. Stop that knocking type knocking.
Who are you to stop us doing knocking type knocking?
I'm Neddy Seagoon, type Neddy Seagoon.
Never heard of you, type, sir. Go away, type.
Go away, never heard of me. I won't stand for this. Go away, never heard of me. Open this door at once. Come along. Who's there?
Open the door.
I can't. Some fool's taken the bolt off. Can you open it your side?
No. Don't come in. I'm in the bath.
What are you doing in the bath?
I'm not doing anything in the bath.
Miss Bannister! Explain what Mr. Handicron is doing in your bathroom, you sinful woman.
He's washing a savage tiger.
A yes. Tiger?
Yes.
A sinful savage tiger? Oh. I've had enough of this.
Obviously time for Mr. Ray Ellington.
Jingle bells, 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 jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride on one horse open sleigh. Say, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. What fun it is to ride on a one-horse open sleigh, dashing through the snow in the one-horse sleigh. Over the fields we go, laughing all the way. Say, bells on Harkness ring, every cheek's aglow. Such fun it is to ride along, singing as we go. Come on, dogs. Come on, Gladys. Jezebel, come on. Come on, dogs. Now, I want you all to sing for the ladies and gentlemen. And if one of you dogs barks one wrong note, back to Battersea you go. Now, you ready? Let's go. Ow, 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 ow. Open sleigh. Jingle, jangle, jingle all the day. Oh, what fun it is to ride on a one-horse open sleigh. What's going on? Ow, 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 ow. Come on, boy, you can make it.
Is now appearing at the Battersea Dogs Home. The Wallace Greenslade Story, Part 3. As this scene opens, I'm found in the star dressing room at the Palladium with my manager. I have 5 minutes to finish my black Russian cigarette before I'm off.
Oh, my life. Ruin my business, my wife and children, my wife. Ruin. I'll never be able to look Val in the face again. Oh, dear.
Oh. Something wrong, Lou?
Something wrong, he says. The audience, they've gone, the momsers. 5 to 9, they got up and left.
5 to 9? What? Wait. I've got a hunch.
It suits you.
Switch on the electric type wireless.
Hello, folks. Here's the old weather there. The old moon's light a variable. Gonna have the sun in the day, and gonna get dark at night. From Coventry.
So, that's where the audience are. Back home listening to Eccles. He's the new idol. Greenslade, I fear he's stolen your public.
Oh, I feel faint. Pour some brandy down my throat.
Dad, Britpipe. You've got to kidnap Eccles or Greenslade is finished.
Right. Moriarty, have you got a blackjack?
No, mine's red.
Never mind. Eccles is colorblind anyway. Let's go.
Get up there.
Next morning, we read the terrible news.
Listen. Ace BBC announcer Eccles signed by Grippipe Thin for stage tour.
The swine single-crossed us.
You mean double?
No, this is the first time.
This means ruin. No more luxury. I'll have to stop eating in the canteen. Give up my subscription to the nursing mother.
And so we became vagrants. We wandered the streets. A bitter wind blew up from the east, and I cursed the fact I was wearing a kilt.
One Christmas, we were trying to make a living by diving for coins in the gutter from passing ships. When we found ourselves outside the London Palladium.
Thank you.
Comrades, comrades, ever since we were boys.
Thank you, lady.
A pleasure.
Here comes a rich customer.
A handsome cab drew up, and out stepped an ugly passenger.
Stand aside, my good man. My public awaits for me.
Spare a copper for the guy.
What guy?
This guy here. He's starving.
You see my secretary, my good man.
He brushed me aside with his brush. The north wind blew. Flakes of white settled on my shoulder. To cap it all, I got dandruff.
Comrade sadly, comrade sadly, ever since you were boys.
Oh, thank you, kind sir.
It's nothing. I have plenty more buttons. Aren't you Jewel and Wallace or Morecambe and Wise?
No, it's Seagull and Greenslade.
Oh, horrors. How the mighty have fallen.
You too?
Here. Here's a photograph of a bowl of soup.
Thank you.
And when you've finished it, come and see me at the BBC. In 6 weeks' time.
And so, 6 weeks went by.
Good heavens, Wall. 6 weeks have gone by.
At the same time, inside the London Palladium, 6 weeks had also passed at the same speed.
Winds like the variable. That's what I'll say to myself. Oh, who is it?
It's Lou. I'll come to say good evening to you.
Come in, my good fellow.
Oh, Eccles Schmeckles, my lovely boy. You're going to make a lot of money for me. We sold every seat in the play.
What are they going to sit on?
He's guy funny, witty, dear, do your best, my little Eccles. Help on the old out front. Oh, think of the guilt. Oh.
What a nice fellow. That's a nice. I like that fellow. I don't know. Oh, hello. I didn't see you coming back.
Eccles, don't forget now. You do well tonight, and we'll give you a 5-shilling rise.
Oh, that'll bring my money up to 6 shillings a month. I'm rich. I'm rich. Oh, you're going to be alive.
Yes. Steady, lad, steady. Don't let it go to your head.
Gripwipe, here's his paycheck just arrived.
What? Let's see. £2,000. Moriarty, take 6 shillings out and give it to our Charlie.
I heard that. Don't you dare give that 6 bob to Charlie. That's my money.
Oh, my life, it's happened again.
What?
The audience gone up and gone home. Someone's took him away.
I'm going home tonight.
No. Wait. Switch on the radio.
This is the BBC Home Service. And here is Blue Bottle with the news.
You swine, Blue Bottle! You
That was The Goon Show, a BBC recorded program featuring Peter Sellers, Paddy Seacombe, Spike Milligan and John Snagg with the Wellington Quartet and Max Gelfay. The orchestra was conducted by Wally Stott, script by Spike Milligan, announcer Wallace Greenslade, the program produced by Peter Eaton.
River in the city of New York stands a magnificent complex of stone and glass buildings, the headquarters of the United Nations, where Diana Prince, secretly Wonder Woman, enters on the ground floor on her way to her job at the International Organization's Crisis Bureau.
Morning, Miss Prince. Looks like rain, no?
Hi, Tommy. I'll wait and see on that rain before I commit myself.
You've been hanging out with diplomats too long, Miss Prince. They never commit them. Uh-oh. Trouble. That man coming in. Excuse me, General.
What is the meaning of this? Where did that buzzer come from?
That's the metal detector concealed in the doorway, sir. I'm afraid you're carrying some large metal object, and I'm going to have to search you if you don't...
I certainly do mind. I'm a brigadier general in the United States Army with an important appointment to see the Secretary General. Now, if you will excuse me...
You'll remember that this building stands on international property, General, and that bulge under your coat, a pistol... I'll take that.
Get your hands off me. Of course it's a pistol. I'm a general, and generals carry pistols if they so desire.
Well, I don't know about that, General. I look...
This scene is getting ugly. Probably my signal to duck into that empty corridor.
I absolutely must see the Secretary General, or a terrible international incident will erupt.
Then you'll see him without the... Well, it looks as though you'll get your wish, sir. Here comes the Secretary General down the corridor now. You'll... General, put away that gun. Hey, you're no general. You're
an assassin!
Wonder Woman, I expected you to show up, but you won't deflect my next shot. What is going on here?
Mr. Secretary General, find some cover. An assassination attempt. Great, Wonder Woman. You kicked the gun away. I got it now.
You've got my gun, but you won't get me.
You move fast for a stodgy old military man, but at the end of this corridor, there's just... A wall? Great Hera, he crashed through that wall as if it were cardboard. And now he's outside, flying under his own power, calling robot plane.
At the command of its Amazon mistress, an immeasurably powerful invisible plane zooms down from the sky, hovers briefly above her, dropping a rope ladder.
I've got the ladder. Now climb, robot plane. Follow the flying man.
And the supersonic chase is on through the skies over New York.
That so-called general is not even an ordinary assassin. He's already moving at nearly three times the speed of sound and accelerating. Faster, faster, robot plane. Must catch up to...
Welcome, my princess. How pleasant to see you again.
Goddesses, preserve me. Mars, the god of war. Where in the cosmos am I?
The cosmos is quite correct, Princess Diana. For once, you were tricked into traveling at eight times the speed of sound, chasing the general I created, making it possible to bring you crashing here through a dimensional window into another universe.
Another universe? Why? What's that you're doing with your sword? It's flaming.
I am sealing off the dimensional window, closing the hole in the fabric of the cosmos like a scar.
So I can't get back. But what does the high and mighty god of war want with a mere Amazon woman?
Not a mere Amazon princess. You underestimate yourself. You are the only thing at the United Nations capable of keeping my general and my other three agents who have infiltrated the Security Council from killing the chiefs of certain key delegations.
Infiltrated the Security Council? Merciful Minerva!
I will allow you to go home soon, Wonder Woman, to a world at war.
I'll reopen that dimensional window or... I tried to leap up at you with all my Amazon strength, but that sound in my head sent me flying in the other direction.
Try again, Princess.
I tried to whip my arms around to make an air current, throw you off balance and out of the way, but it only drove me down into the ground.
You are in another universe, Wonder Woman, where the dominating force is sound. The physical laws that give you your powers do not hold here.
Sound? Then I'll yell at the top of my lungs.
You can't even focus the energies of your own body. How can you hope to tumble the god of war against his will?
Hera, help me.
I'll try, Wonder Woman.
Who's that?
It's Hera, queen of the goddesses. You called, and I answer. Mars cannot hear me,
only you.
Giving up, Wonder Woman? Save your strength for the Great War, a war that will feed my power and make Mars supreme among the gods.
There is a power I can give you that may defeat Mars.
What power?
The power to conjure images. If you throw symbols at him that anger him enough, he will bring his sword down on you in rage. Then if you can block the sword with your magic bracelets, that will harness enough power to rip open the dimensional window.
The Security Council session is beginning, Princess. Care to watch?
Power mad, despotic male, I say this to you.
Taking Hera's advice, Wonder Woman conjures up the universal symbol of peace.
What? A dove? You conjure a bird of peace to fly at me? Here is my answer.
Oh, a hawk to kill the dove. Then what is your answer to this?
When the rest lives.
One of those peace-loving folk singers. Let her contend with this.
Behind this green fire, he's trying to be the dragon.
Hitler, you play rough. Then take the sounds of Woodstock. The Civil Rights March on Washington.
I have a dream.
The Sermon on the Mount.
Enough of you and your silly game! Now you will know that the power of war is greater than the power of peace. And I will prove it with a single swing of my sword.
As the God of War swings his mighty sword, Wonder Woman blocks the blow with her magic bracelets, harnessing enough power to slash open the dimensional window back into this universe. And in microseconds, she is back in the United Nations.
Made it. But I must get to the Security Council chamber before it's too late. Oh, help me, Hera, help me!
Diana, this is Hera. You will be able to find the four assassins because they will be glowing with a glow only you can see. Be fleet of foot and strong of heart, Diana.
Oh, thank you, Queen of Goddesses, thank you!
Throwing open the door to the chamber, Wonder Woman enters, and instantly her keen eye catches sight of a figure of a man standing in the back of the hall.
And the chair recognizes the representative of the People's
Republic. You! Over there! The man with the broom!
With one mighty leap, Wonder Woman reaches the disguised assassin and grabs the broom out of his hand.
Unhand that poor custodian.
He's no custodian, Mr. Chairman. Look here. This broom handle has a concealed dart gun. And there, look out, the fake general.
You'll never take me. The bullets, they're bouncing off your bracelets.
Like you're bouncing off the floor. And you, up there in the press box, you're no reporter.
You won't get me.
Leaping up to the press section 40 feet over the meeting chamber, Wonder Woman seizes the phony reporter.
You can't hide now. You can't even run.
Oh, my neck! I know my neck!
Your weapons first. Where are your assassination weapons?
In my pants!
Just what I thought. A hidden hypodermic needle. Now for assassin number four. Where could he... There! That cameraman!
Leaping down into the hall again, Wonder Woman confronts the last of the would-be assassins and seizes his camera.
This camera holds enough poisonous serum to drop every single delegate in this hall. Someone call UN security to pick up these four. Hey, where do they go?
They vanished. All four assassins just disappeared into thin air.
Impossible. Where could they have... Hera! Oh, Hera, help me!
Look up there. A woman, a beautiful woman, floating in the air over the chamber.
Women and men of the United Nations, my child Wonder Woman has done well. She has averted a horrible war on Earth, as we of Olympus have dealt with its cause on high, the evil god of war.
Then you have captured Mars, great Hera?
Yes, and forced him to recall his four agents. We have imprisoned the lord of war in a netherworld of the cosmos, from which even he cannot escape. Your Earth is safe from his forces through your efforts, Diana, along with our own.
Thank you, Mother Hera.
Carry on, my children. and go in peace.
The bracelets that deflect bullets, Wonder Woman? Those right there on your wrists?
Oh, Nick, you're such a goofy. Wonder Woman will be embarrassed.
That's all right, Sandra, Mitch. I haven't been embarrassed since I was small and I accidentally knocked the scepter out of my mother, the Queen's hand, while I was learning to throw the last sleep.
We join Wonder Woman, the Amazon princess, as she walks along the beach with her friend Sandra and Sandra's boyfriend, Hitch.
The lasso! The magic lasso! I know all about that Amazon lasso stuff.
Oh, Mitch, you were never so impressed with me.
No, really. That lasso can make anyone tell the truth or do whatever you say when you put it around somebody. Right, Wonder Woman?
That's what my golden lasso does, all right.
Show me, would you? Try it out on me.
Oh, Mitch.
That's all right, Sandra. Watch out now. You're hooked, Mitch. Tell me, what's your birthday?
February the 30th?
How can that be? There is no February 30th.
Mitch, no one's ever been able to resist the lasso's compulsion. How did you?
Maybe the metal plate on my scalp has something to do with it.
A metal plate? You mean you had an accident that made it necessary to rebuild your skull? What part of your skull?
Right here. Feel it?
Yes, that would explain it. It's right over the portion of the frontal lobe of your cerebrum, which the lasso usually controls. That's quite remarkable. You told me a secret of yours, Mitch. I owe you a secret of mine.
Secret? What kind of secret?
Well, do you see this golden tiara of mine? That's magical, too.
I know it's the hardest substance on Earth, but how is it magical?
It's so closely linked to my being that whoever possesses it can control me as surely as I control people with my lasso.
No kidding. Hey, even I didn't know...
Calling for help.
Those people on the beach over there.
With the swiftness of Mercury, the amazing Amazon reaches the small group of distressed people as her two young friends follow behind.
Wonder Woman, my little boy is out in that water, and I can't see him. We all ran up when I thought I saw a shark fin and...
Wait up here! Calm down and wait here.
With the skill and speed of a mermaid, Wonder Woman enters the realm of Neptune to search for the boy. As on the shore, Sandra and Mitch reach the sea.
Where did Wonder Woman go?
She went in after my son. She hasn't surfaced for a good 10 seconds now. I wonder if she's...
Will you look at that? There's some fight going on out there. My gosh, a shark!
A shark? Where? Oh, that's the biggest shark I've ever... It's flying through the air. She's thrown it out to sea.
Wow, what a woman. Look, she's carrying something back to shore.
Bobby, she's found my Bobby. Oh, thank God.
Hooray for Wonder Woman. Yay!
Yay! Yay! Nicole, Nicole! Hey, Sally, don't
that way. What? Oh, that yellow thing. It's, oh my gosh, Wonder Woman's tiara must have fallen off.
Here, I'll give it back to her.
Give it back nothing? This is the chance of a lifetime.
Mitch, you wouldn't.
Want to bet? Wonder Woman, fine job of mouth-to-mouth resuscitation you gave that kid.
Yes, Mitch, my tiara, you...
Now, how about a little resuscitation of my wallet, hey? There's small amounts of gold dissolved in all seawater. How about extracting, say, an ounce for me?
Mitch, you wouldn't.
I will obey, Master, of course.
As if possessed of a power greater than her own, the Amazon dives back into the sea to churn up hundreds of gallons into her waterspout, which Wonder Woman whips against the shoreline over a deposit of granite rocks and lime shells. Even as the water falls toward the deposit, Wonder Woman races the wave to the ground and superheats the rock and lime by the friction of rubbing her hand against the surfaces. so that as the water touches the rock, it quickly evaporates away, leaving only the glistening gold dust.
Wow! Now that's what I call a get-rich-quick scheme.
I'm ashamed of you, Mitch. You give that tiara back to Wonder Woman this minute or I'll...
Yo, what, chick? You can't do a thing, because next, I'm sending Wonder Woman to dig me up the biggest uncut diamond in the world.
We Amazons know the location of that gem. It's at the bottom of a certain quarry in Africa. It will take some time to get it for you.
I've got all the time in the world. I can use 40 winks.
But as Wonder Woman pilots her robot plane out to the heart of Africa, and Mitch falls asleep on the beach...
I don't know whatever would have gotten into Mitch, but I'll put an end to it by taking the tiara.
Sandra, what are you doing with my tiara?
I got it away from Mitch for you. See? He fell asleep when you...
Give me that. Right away.
Sure, Wonder Woman. I got it for you. What are you doing? Throwing it back at Mitch?
Don't tell him you took it when he wakes up. That business about the holder of the tiara making me do whatever they want isn't true. I made it up.
Made it up? Why?
Because I'm madly in love with Mitch and I want to impress him.
You? You?
Mitch? Mitch, wake up. Look what I've got.
Why? Ooh, Wonder Woman. What a diamond. It's got to be as big as a grapefruit. That ties it. Now I know I can trust you. Look, there's this secret cove I'd like you to meet me at in about an hour.
Anything you say, Master. Where is it?
KZSU, Stanford.
But an hour later, someone else finds Mitch at the hideout in the secret cove before our heroine does.
Is that you, Mitch?
Sandy, I told you never to come here. If they find out I told you about this place, you wouldn't be...
I had to tell you something about Wonder Woman. The tiara trick isn't real. She just told you that to...
She what? Well, I'll have the last laugh on her. You get out of here, Sandy. Scram!
I didn't even finish the story, and he slammed the wooden gate on me. I don't know what's with him lately. Uh-oh. That's Wonder Woman coming. I better be out of sight. Mitch, where are you, Master?
The other side of the gate, Wonder Woman!
Mitch, who are these three men in these cages here, and these other two guarding them?
My friends are guarding those three scientists who have been missing for a week or so. The ones working on the secret rocket fuel formula. And you are handcuffed. I won't be needing this tiara anymore. I'll just heave it out into the water.
You tricked me. You knew I was on to you. How?
That I did, and never mind how. But I'm also up on my Amazon lore, and I know that if you're shackled by a man the way you are now, you're helpless.
I can't lift a finger against you, or your henchmen, or whoever they are.
But we can lift your magic lasso. Take it, Bart.
Give me that. Here it is, Mitch.
Thanks. Now I suppose you've guessed why I want this.
To get the formula out of those three scientists. The magic lasso is lots more dependable than torture, is that it?
You catch on fast, lady. Listen, if you don't mind, I'll leave you here by the cove entrance while the rest of us go inside and take notes. High tide is coming in, and people who get caught short have a habit of drowning when the waves get up here. Wouldn't want that to happen to our three geniuses, would you?
You're all heart, Mitch. Psst. What? What was that?
Psst. Wonder Woman, it's me, Sandra. Is it all clear?
Sandra, you'd better get out of here before you drown. The tide will soon cover these rocks.
Not until I give you this. I swam out and retrieved it when Mitch threw it away.
My tiara. Thank Hera.
It's the hardest substance known. I remembered that. It'll cut through those handcuffs and free you.
And meanwhile, several hundred feet inside the hideout.
3 measures of bauxite quartz dissolved in a refined muriatic solution.
Go on, Professor. The rest of the formula. We've got all the time in the world now.
You'll have even more time than you think where you're going.
Amazon, empty your guns into her. She's moving her arms as fast as the bullets themselves, so they ricochet off her bracelets. Let's get out of here.
We are now, thanks to you, Wonder Woman.
As the tide goes out, Mitch and his henchmen are delivered to the authorities, and the dust of this adventure settles, and the Amazon princess again finds herself walking along the beach with a young friend.
So I had to tell you I was trying to steal Mitch away from you, Sandra, to protect you. You see, I had been investigating the spy ring who had kidnapped the scientists, and I already knew about Mitch.
I'm sorry, too, Wonder Woman. By telling you you were tricking him, I almost blew it for the scientists and you as well.
Men never have a very funny things to the minds of women as women do to men. We can only hope to grow wiser from each experience and try never to stop growing. Go in peace, sister.
Please. Lex Luthor here. No doubt you watch Mystery Playhouse to inspire your criminal muses as well. But let me tell you a little secret. I also check out comics and comics, toys and games for yet more diabolical schemes. After all, it's their crafty grant that makes Mystery Playhouse possible. With their wide assortment of comics and comics, toys and games, I can get the inside scoop on what the old Super Bowl is up to. One of these days, I'll discover a secret identity, and then it'll be all over. That's comics and comics, toys and games at 405 California Avenue. Be there or be square.
The Penguin, Batman's clever enemy, has recently been released from prison. While on parole, he has returned to his own manufacturing company. One day, he sends a letter to Batman.
Dick, listen to this.
What is it, Bruce?
You'll remember the Penguin asked the parole board if he could reopen his umbrella manufacturing company.
Yes, and they said it was okay.
Right. So far, he seems to be going straight. Here's a letter the commissioner gave me from the Penguin. Guess what? He says that now that he's become a legitimate businessman, he wants Batman, who put him behind bars, to return the compliment by endorsing his line of Penguin umbrellas.
What? Endorse his umbrellas? He's got some nerve.
Well, I'm refusing, of course, but there's something strange about this, Dick. I don't trust the Penguin.
Let's see that. He's invited us to inspect his plant first. Wants us to come tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. Are we going?
I think Batman and Robin should have a closer look at this company of his. But we'd better watch out for one of the Penguin's usual tricks.
Next afternoon, in the office of the Penguin Umbrella Company, a gleeful penguin has just finished briefing his associates.
So Batman has refused to give me an endorsement of my umbrella. Well, in 1 hour, he will have changed his mind. Have the reporters and photographers been notified?
Yeah, boss. We told him to be downstairs in the plant at 6 o'clock.
Fine. will be escorting Batman and Robin to our umbrella testing stand on the roof. And you know the signal. When I say the word fly, you will pull the launching spring on the platform.
Hey, right, boss.
All right. They'll all be here in half an hour. Get to your places. Ah, now then, Batman and Robin. You've seen my entire plant. I presume you now believe me when I tell you I am quite a legitimate businessman.
I see it, Penguin, but I don't quite believe it yet.
And still you won't give me an endorsement, eh?
You should know better than that, Penguin. Hey, where are you taking us?
Our last inspection, gentlemen. Up here on the roof is where we test our finished umbrellas. You see, there's our water spray hoses, and that giant fan is our wind machine.
Hmm. Very neat, Penguin. What's this platform for over here?
That's our testing stand, Batman. Here, let me give you a simple demonstration. Take one of my larger umbrellas. This one will do, I think. Yes. Now, Batman, take the umbrella and stand right over there on the platform.
All right. I stand here with your umbrella. What then?
Then? Then you fly, Batman!
Batman, you've tossed him in the air. You!
Let go of him, Robin. He's perfectly safe. Batman, open the umbrella. You can use it as a parachute. Are you all right?
Yes, Robin. I can float down to the plant below. But when I get my hands on you, Penguin...
I've got him, Batman.
There, you see? Look below. He's coming down quite safely.
All right, hold it there.
What's that? Those flash bulbs and floodlights. Photographers.
And my little surprise, Robin. Now that Batman has personally seen the superiority of my product, I want the whole world to know about it.
What? Look at that umbrella Batman used. When he opened it, there's something written on it.
Yes, Robin. It says, Batman stakes his life on the quality of Penguin umbrellas. It's quite an endorsement, wouldn't you say?
You'll go back to jail for this, Penguin.
What for, Robin? I've committed no crime, have I? Oh, no, my friend. Not this time. No. Your breakfast, gentlemen, and the morning paper.
Thank you, Alfred. Oh, no. Look at this.
Oh, yes, I know, sir. That horrid Penguin person is using your name in a full-page advertisement.
It says, like Batman, you too can depend on a Penguin umbrella. Like Batman, it's tough and indestructible. They got a pretty good picture of you, too.
Okay, Dick, rub it in.
Well, if you could have seen your face when those flash bulbs went off.
gentlemen, your breakfast?
Yes, thank you, Alfred. And take this paper away.
Yes, sir.
No, wait. Let me see this article. Dick, listen to this. The Penguin Umbrella Company announced today they have been chosen to supply all beach umbrellas and furnishings for the exclusive Arcadia Island Resort.
Huh?
The first shipment of 500 deluxe Penguin beach umbrellas arrives tomorrow, personally delivered by the Penguin.
Arcadia Island. That's that new millionaire's resort. Supposed to be the most exclusive in the world.
Yes, but somehow the combination of the Penguin and millionaires has me worried. Alfred, have the Batplane ready for us in 2 hours. Robin and the Batman are going to make a little trip to Arcadia Island.
Batman, if my calculations are right, that must be Arcadia Island over to the right.
Yes, Robin. I'm letting down. We're going to fly in low and have a look.
Looks like there's an empty beach we can use for a landing strip. But they may not like unannounced visitors. Can't you radio them at all?
No, Robin. They want this island resort kept private. So they purposely isolated themselves from all outside communications. But I have notified the Coast Guard of what we're doing, and they're standing by. Of course, it may just be a false alarm, but let's go down there and see.
All right, Ben. Are the special umbrellas all nicely set up now on the beach?
Yeah, boss. All set.
Hmm.
And I see the beach is nicely filled with rich people, too.
All right. You know the plan. When I activate this remote radio control switch, the hidden motors in those umbrellas will start to make them spin.
We've positioned them so that they will blow up a giant sandstorm, obscuring the entire beach and the clubhouse. We will all be wearing our special face masks, and under cover of the sandstorm, we will have our pick of the clubhouse treasury and all those delightful cabanas with money and jewelry lying about.
The perfect robbery. Now we're almost ready. Here are your positions.
Looks peaceful enough to me, Batman. Just a bunch of happy millionaires sunning themselves.
Yes, but I think we better go in for a landing anyway. Ready the flaps, Robin. I'm coming down.
Flaps ready?
All right.
Wait, Batman, look down there. Those beach umbrellas, they started spinning. Look at the people running.
That's sand. It's being blown over the whole beach.
We can't land in that sandstorm. Look, it's being blown towards the clubhouse there.
And look who's running out of the clubhouse, wearing those masks.
The Penguin and his men. Now they're covered up by the sand.
I knew the Penguin was up to something. Well, even if we can't land there, we've got to stop that sandstorm. Get the Coast Guard on the radio, Robin, and hang on!
All right, Ben! We're covered now. You, follow me to the clubhouse safe. And you, too, take the cabanas.
Yeah, but what about all them people running around?
They're too busy to think about a robbery now. Get going!
Hey, boss, what's that?
Huh? I don't know. Sounds like a jet.
Look, the sandstorm's disappearing.
Curses! It's the Batplane using the jet to blow away our umbrellas. How did Batman know my plans?
Hey, boss, we better hide these masks and get out of here. Those guys have us spotted.
Okay. Wheels locked, Robin.
Wheels locked.
Engine off.
Engine off. Nice landing, Batman.
Thanks. Robin, look over there.
Hey, those guys running.
It's the Penguin Gang. After them.
Hey, one of them's got a gun, all right?
Look, he fell. Now's our chance. Got you, my friend.
And I fly through the air and connect with your chin.
Nice work, Robin.
One more left. There he goes.
Hey, you. Wait for baby. Don't you want to join your friends?
Well, that takes care of them. But where's the Penguin? Batman, look, out on the water, in that small boat.
Yes, the Penguin using an umbrella as a sail.
I'll start the plane, Batman.
No, Robin, hold it.
But the Penguin, he's...
Yes, he's sailing right into the arms of some company, Robin. Look out there on the horizon.
What is it?
The United States Coast Guard. I radioed them from the Batplane.
Yes, and this time, I'd say the Penguin's goose is really cooked.
Do some things seem scary to you? Do some things make you mad? Do you sometimes feel happy and other times feel sad? Well, that's the way that people are. Everybody feels it all, no matter if they're very short or very, very tall. But what is most important is the way that we can play and say the things that we feel are important every day. So let's talk about the things we sometimes feel inside. We sometimes think inside. We sometimes hide inside. Let's sing about the things we sometimes feel inside so that we can be good friends. Are you a boy or a girl? I used to think that you got born and then you turned into a girl or a boy. But now I know that if you're a boy, you were born a boy. And if you're a girl, you were born a girl. You're just the way you're supposed to be. Baby girls grow up to be big girls and then women. Baby boys grow up to be big boys and then men. Some are fancy on the outside. Some are fancy on the inside. Everybody's fancy, everybody's fine. Your body's fancy, and so is mine. Boys are boys from the beginning. When you're born a boy baby, you grow to be a bigger boy and then a man. Girls are girls right from the start. When you're born a girl baby, you grow to be a bigger girl and then a woman. Everybody's fancy, everybody's fine. Your body's fancy, and so is mine. Only girls can be the mummies. Only boys can be the daddies. Everybody's fancy, everybody's fine. Your body's fancy, and so is mine. I think you're a special person, and I like your ins and outsides. Everybody's fancy, everybody's fine. Your body's fancy, and so is mine.
This is KZSU, Stanford. We hope you've been enjoying the play-by-play recap of last night's basketball game, and we'll continue after this intermission. I see they're ready now. We hope you enjoy the programming on KZSU Stanford. The pledge goal has been reached for this year. We're doing very well. Are you ready in there? All right, we now continue with the play-by-play recap of last night's basketball game.
Welcome once more to the careers of the rich and famous. I'm Howard Staple. Today we have the honor of featuring one of the all-greatest actors of all-greatest times. That is, of course, Mr. Cesar Romero. Cesar, if I may be so bold as to address you by your first name, has taken a lot of time to come all the way down here to the studio and provide us with some of the inside information regarding his past, his present, and hopefully his future. Thank you for being with us, Mr. Cesar.
Of course.
Cesar, we've talked to you prior to this meeting and discussed various occurrences in your career, but one item seems to come up again and again, that being, of course, the stigma you've suffered from fame. After playing the 60s role in Batman, the arch-villain, the Joker, everyone now seems to associate you from the view of, or impose that view on you, rather, of the Joker, whatever role you play.
Eh, yes, it's a real shame, because I'm just an actor and I play any other part. But if you were to meet me on the street, you'd have no idea I was the Joker.
Yes, of course, and your portfolio testifies this and reflects that, definitely. In the many years that you've spent in the Shakespearean theater, the varied roles you've taken, sometimes, oftentimes, playing characters that were in stark antithesis to one another. I think primarily of that week in which you played the different play each day. And of course the week in which you played two very opposite roles in a single day for an entire week. That was when you played the comedy Twelfth Night in the morning, and in the evening you played the tragedy Hamlet, Prince of Denmark. Now, I know this was years before your critically acclaimed role as the Joker, and no one had any idea that you, Cesar Romero, would be the greatest criminal prankster of all time, nay, of any time. But be this as this may, do you have any thoughts on the difficulty of playing two opposite roles like that on the very same day?
Yeah, it was challenging. I had never played any such role like that before. It was very difficult, yes.
Indeed, the contrast you showed in the before-mentioned week is an excellent example. Let me mention to our viewers which picture that they see right now. The one on the right is, of course, Caesar as the clown in Twelfth Night, whereas the one on the left is Caesar in the dramatic Hamlet, Prince of Denmark production. Here you see him in the grave scene in which the famous lines, "Alas, poor York," are about to be delivered. Caesar is, of course, digging the grave as the clown. Caesar, I'm sure everyone is impressed with the contrast of these performances, but let me ask you about the actual makeup. Who applied it? Is that really you?
Yeah, which one? The first clown or the second clown?
The second.
I applied the first clown and the second clown as well. They're both really me.
Amazing, amazing. The purple tux is definitely a brilliant touch, I think.
Thank you.
Now, it was the King Lear production where you first share the spotlight with any particularly nationally recognized actor, Sir Laurence Olivier in this case.
Sir who?
Sir Laurence Olivier, the gentleman who played the king part.
Oh, yes. I remember him vaguely.
Well, he remembers you vividly. In fact, he says of you, and I quote, I have seen no greater fool in my entire life.
Publicity hype, I'm sure.
I tend to disagree with you, Caesar. The critics rarely unite on their opinions, but they did in your case. Everyone left Lear impressed with the authenticity that you brought the role of the fool.
It was nothing any other fool couldn't have done.
What modesty, Caesar. A refreshing characteristic from one as renowned as... What's that? My producer's saying... Oh, how witty, of course. Nothing that any other fool couldn't have done. how clever indeed. Getting on, we have another performance, one that has been filmed, and our researchers have dug it up. It's you in the production of Julius Caesar. Coincidentally, you are the star role as the dim-witted Brutus. Your co-star, Frank Gorsham, who would later go with you and join in the Batman series as the Riddler. But at this time, no one knows that. No one's wildest dreams could have seen you two as comic book villains when they viewed the dramatic delivery, the natural sincerity, the presence you captured, a clip of which we have here. Charles, would you roll that?
Surprise, Caesar! The joke's on you!
Me too, Brute! Thank you, Charles. Astounding, simply astounding. A performance which truly deserves the salute. Hail Caesar.
Corny.
Yes, and ironic that both of you would not only be in the same series years later, but would become neighbors in Beverly Hills.
Yes, well, it's a small world.
But not small enough to keep our camera crews of the careers of the rich and famous from getting their assignment. And their task was to film you at home, Caesar. And Charles, will you roll that? Here you see the crews. They drive up for the first time outside Caesar's plush hideout. There you see the sign there. Our crews take the orthodox entrance up the side of the wall. Your other neighbor happens to poke his head out the window just then. Bob Crane, obviously unprepared, looking somewhat beaten. We respect his privacy, however, and press on for the assignment. The sign says second floor, so I presume that they will look for the stairs. Yes, on down to greet you. By the way, I apologize for the canted angle that the camera seems to be at.
It's just my home. It's just built on the Beverly Hillside.
Yes, of course. Though the pool hall, you'll notice all the pools there. That's very beautiful. There's your charming family. Yes, apparently the humidity from the swimming pool has affected the filters. Everyone's hair seems to be somewhat green. That should go away, though, I'm sure. What I can't understand is why the lips are so bright and the red goes all the way up the cheekbone.
That's the Kool-Aid for my son's birthday party. I knew the square cups were a bad idea.
Yes, his birthday, eh?
Yes, it's on every April Fool's Day.
Wonderful. I bet you were surprised to see us then.
Yeah, I'll see.
Well, that explains the fantastic toys, the giant jack-in-the-box, the actual scaled-size rocking horse, the large merry-go-round. Now, I'm just reading the signs. You correct me if I'm wrong. Now, where are we going now?
We had a little surprise of our own for your camera crew, see?
A dungeon? No, it's just, I can just barely read it. It says something like, chamber. Oh, torture chamber. Oh, wonderful.
Yes, we had to place, we placed the sound man in the rotary saw conveyor belt.
Yes, I was wondering what happened to the sound.
The lightman, he just fits very nicely on the rack. And the Iron Maiden wraps so snugly around the cameraman.
Ooh, what happened? What happened to the picture?
Oh, well, we had to save some for next week.
Oh, very clever. How original.
Not really.
Well, Caesar, I'm very impressed with your estate. Little wonder your letters of recommendation speak so highly of you. Quotes Burgess Meredith here. He says, Caesar makes the rest of us actors look foul, And Otto Preminger here quotes, I see the career of Caesar climb like a thermometer on a summer's day, and like the British Empire, that sun will never set till hell freezes over. Vincent Price simply says, exquisite. Kurt Kirsteiner says, what's this? This must be the work of some prankster or joker.
Joker? What does he say?
Well, it says, Mystery Playhouse is sponsored by Comics and Comics Toys and Games at 405 California Avenue.
Sid quote, Mystery Playhouse is sponsored by Comics and Comics Toys and Games at 405 California Avenue, unquote. We now return you to the music of Raymond Raquello, playing for you.
Those creatures know what that means, what anything means. Wait a minute, something's happening.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast.
Now here's another bulletin from Washington, D.C.
Martial law prevails throughout. Ladies and gentlemen, I have a grave announcement to make.
So that we may confront this destructive adversary.
Everything wiped out. This may be the last broadcast. We'll stay here to the end.
There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling the transmission. We control the volume. We can change the tone to a fuzzy bass or focus it to a tinny treble.
We can speed things up so fast you can hardly understand what's being said.
Or we can make things so slow you don't care.
We control the content. We can make it boring.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive. It's our show. We can do anything we want, because this is...
Mystery Playhouse. 90.1.
Hitchcock here with some awful news. It's my wedding anniversary, and I've no gift to give my wife. That may not seem to be frightening to you, but you don't know my wife. Then again, some things are worse. Here, then, is our sponsor.
Suspense is brought to you by Primetime Radio of San Jose. Join KZSU every Tuesday night at 10:30 p.m. for more classic radio theater with Suspense.
What luck. In your absence, I managed to acquire the perfect diamond, which, as we all know, makes the perfect gift. Which reminds me, here's our feature, the perfect alibi.
And now, Autolite and its 60,000 dealers and service stations present...
Suspense! Tonight,
Autolite brings you Mr. Danny Kaye in The Too Perfect Alibi, a suspense play produced and directed by Anton M. Leder.
It's just a stupid mistake, Catherine. Look, I'll call my lawyer and we'll get you out of there right away. But we couldn't. In New York, you can't bail out a person accused of murder. What could they possibly have on her? It was ridiculous. But the thought of Catherine in prison was pure torture for me. My attorney suggested I retain Simon Blade, the shrewdest criminal lawyer in the state. Blade investigated every detail of Catherine's story. Finally, after two of the longest weeks of my life, he called me in.
All right. Now, here's the district attorney's case, Mr. Rogers. She and her boyfriend had an argument in a public place, a restaurant. They argued about two things. One, she wanted to take your country house for a wedding present, but he didn't. Two, he made a little goo-goo eyes at some blonde on the beach and she burned up. She tells him he's cheating on her. So then he burns up. He tells her to go marry somebody else and walks out.
Yes, yes, but how do the police know all this?
They have witnesses, Mr. Rogers, witnesses.
Sorry to have to interrupt the party, but it seems my wife didn't enjoy her diamond after all. Sure, we had a little fight. Maybe we blew up, I don't know. Apparently, it was too perfect. And when it comes to diamonds, like many other things, perfect is a perfectly meaningless term. Since my eyes had no flaws, it had to be a forgery, or so they say. My wife probably shouldn't have left it in there to storm out after me. After all, why not get a second opinion? And speaking of seconds, we will continue the second half of our feature next week. In the meantime, I have to prevent accidents. I seem to be having a lot of them lately. I also noticed my wife invested the rest of our savings in my life insurance policy. I guess the honeymoon is over. But don't forget, our show has just begun. Until next week, if I make it. That sod, that wasn't there a moment ago. Oh well.
Tell me, Calton, that Danny Kaye.
Yes.
What a criminal mind.
I tell you, they are one wild bunch of people, aren't they?
Yes, with the perfect alibi.
Oh, too Ooh. Perfect it sounds like, but we don't want to give anything away for next week, do
That's
we?
Right, we want everyone to stay in suspense.
Well, it was a very interesting show, but I guess we'll just have to wait until next week to find out what the exciting conclusion is. Until then, it's going to drive me batty.
No, no.
desde que abre los ojos por la mañana.